And he'd used me that weekend. And I burst out crying. I was just like, what? You used me, this, that, and the other. And he went across the car. I was in the car and he just went bam like that in my face. And my nose doesn't really bleed. And it just went poof.
Welcome back to another episode of Girls Know Nothing. Some of you will recognise today's guest as a blushing bride from our TV screens. Married at First Sight UK has caused a little bit of a stir when we see brave singletons marry a complete stranger. But like with many reality TV contributors, they are much more than we see on TV. Janita Stevenson was a social worker prior to looking for love in a very unconventional way. So welcome to the studio, Janita.
Thank you.
Obviously, I first recognised you from Married at First Sight. I have a really weird obsession with the show. I'm like addicted to watching it. But I would love to be on it, but the idea of marrying a complete stranger absolutely terrifies the shit out of me.
And rightly so, to be fair.
Yeah, like what was the like logic behind it, of you doing it?
I was having a bit of a crappy time on dating apps and I just kept getting the same type of guys. And my friend was like, you should apply for this. And I was like, no. And I literally put it off for 2 months. And I thought, you know what? I was bored one Sunday. I thought, you know what? I'll just do it. I'll do the audition take. Because that's what I'd put off. Submitted my application, just thinking that would be that. And then, yeah, I got contacted back. And I was like, oh. Actually been taken seriously.
Every woman I've ever spoken to that's been a contributor on a show like that has always said, I've had a shit time of dating apps, so I'm just going to go to the other extreme and apply for a dating show instead. Yeah. But like, you literally married the person.
Yeah. I thought because of the style of the show that it might be a bit different and I might not get an idiot as much. Because I'm thinking if someone signed up for that show, then they're looking for marriage too. They're taking it seriously and they want to settle down and, you know, maybe have more of the same ideologies and morals, all of that. But obviously, yeah. Still came out single.
But don't quite a lot of people come out single from that show, don't they, really?
Yeah, which is quite sad, actually, given how much you put into it.
Yeah.
Like, it's so mentally, physically, just everything draining.
Like, what was the experience like? Because every week you have like a sofa chat
commitment
ceremony, and everybody, you have to bear everything to everyone.
Yeah.
What was that experience like?
It's a lot. It's like a lion's den. So you're sat on the sofas, obviously you have the experts, and then they're sat behind you, everyone else, and they're like listening and you're airing your business. Don't get me wrong, some people are more open than others. Some people are really closed off and you just think, well, why here? You knew what you signed up to. But it would be quite daunting because you can hear them whispering or experts might ask their opinions. So yeah, you've not just got the experts, you've got the rest of the cast listening and having their opinion and input. But you know what? It lasts a lot longer than it looks. Because on TV, it's a bit of like, it's like a snippet.
Yeah.
Whereas you sat there for ages, especially if you've had a lot of problems that week, you are there for some
time. That would
be
me every week, like holding up the entire commitment ceremony.
No, there was one week where everyone seemed to have problems and we were there filming for like 12 hours or like, it was such a long day because everyone had so much shit to bear.
I would probably be even worse. If I was the last couple to go and we'd been filming for 12 hours, I'd probably be so angry. You would not get the best of me out in that situation. But I feel like they would do that on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
They would make me wait.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If you kind of know that you're not doing so well because the work, like, say, the couple that's going through the worst would be at the end. And me and Jordan had that once and I was like waiting and waiting and actually, it makes you feel worse. It gives you more anxiety. It's a horrible feeling. But if you're having a really bad week, it's a horrible feeling. Waiting.
Do you think genuine marriages can come out of a situation like that?
Definitely, because with how you're matched, you're obviously meant to go off stuff in terms of what you believe in, if you want a family, all of that's looked into. And then you're matched off that basis. So I think it's down to sometimes the individuals as well, if they're willing to put the work in. Like at the minute, Zoe and Jenna are still going very strong. They had their hurdles, but they both didn't give up and they thought, right, we're going to put the effort in. And I think they're a good example that you can make it work. You know, obviously my situation was a bit different. Mine was like more one-sided.
You didn't ask for what you got. So what did you ask for?
You know what? I will actually admit with Jordan, on paper, I see why I was matched with him.
Okay.
So where, you know, he had a good job, he had his house, he had the same, well, I can't think of my words now. He wanted the same as me, a family, he wanted to settle down, go like traveling and places together. So we did match a lot and we had a lot of weird things in common. So I was like, wow, I was quite surprised to be honest. Because I did go into it thinking, as long as it's not like Peter Griffin at the end of the aisle, I'll be all right. Like, so I thought, whoever's there, I'll give them the chance as a reason we matched. So with Jordan, I thought, fair play, actually. You've not done me dirty. You've actually listened to me and you matched me. Obviously, on paper and reality are two different things.
Yeah, don't
so
I
know
that.
So in theory, it was meant to work.
Yeah.
But then they can't account for Jordan running off after the experiment. So.
Oh. Yeah. Obviously, before you took part in Married at First Sight, you were a social worker.
Yeah.
So what was, like, tell me about the reasons behind that. Like, what made you want to sign up to be a social worker?
I think my life experiences, I had a lot of things I went through as a child growing up. In terms of like my mum had me when she was like 16, so I had a single parent upbringing. My dad wasn't really around. And my mum got into a really abusive relationship. I call him the devil. It's just easier to call him the devil because that is what he is. And he made our lives hell. So having to deal with that kind of put me in, from a young age, I had some dark experiences and mentally, I reflect now and know I was in a dark place. Obviously when you're young, you don't necessarily realize that. So that very much made me think, you know what? I want to be that person that I didn't necessarily have when I was younger for other people, because I get how hard life is and the reality of certain situations. We went through so much, like he actually attempted to kill my mom. So, and that was really difficult for me because that was the one time when it happened, I'd stayed out at my mate's house for a few consecutive days. Now my mom was really strict when I was growing up, so I didn't really stay out. And this one time I stayed at my mate's for a few days and that's when it happened. And I felt probably a lot of guilt at that time because it was my younger brother that had to deal with it. And then from that day, everything, obviously it wasn't all hunky-dory up to that day,
yeah.
But that moment changed my life, or changed all our lives, and it just all come crashing down. So from that, I think it even more so pushed me to want to help others. I've seen a dark reality that a lot of other people hadn't seen, especially at my age. And, you know, I didn't have friends that have been going through that. There was no one around me that would be like, yeah, because it's not normal. So no one could really relate. And at that age, you obviously, as you're older, you have more understanding. But it was really difficult. So that kind of, yeah, pushed me to be there for other people, and I think it gave me naturally the skills to be a social worker and help others and advocate for others. So yeah, that's probably why. It more so because at school I thought I was going to be a fashion designer. I did like business and all sorts, and then it just, I don't know, just something clicked and I thought, no, that's not what I was meant to do. And I remember after that as well, we had a social worker come. I know my mum had like social workers when chatted me just because of her age,
yeah.
So it triggered that. And then we'd had a social worker when that happened, and she was shit. No offence to her, she was rubbish. And I thought, yeah, like I can do that, but I'll do it better. So So having that one experience as well, I thought, I'm going to make sure that I really do my job properly. And I know like that sentence is not going to help, because I know social workers get stigma as it is. They get so much, and they shouldn't, because there's amazing social workers out there and they do make such a difference. But I have experienced that side. So
what do you think, for the lack of a better word, was the saving grace as to why you chose going down working in social route as opposed to other paths and other directions? Because sometimes when you see young children going through those traumatic experiences, they tend to have similar patterns in their own lives when they grow up.
So I think, to be honest, I actually wanted to be a counsellor. That's where I was for, because I just thought, I know the importance of listening and, you know, really understanding someone and helping them in that way. But because I was quite young going into it, I was advised to do social work. I think the same group had, so I had that experience with my mom and stuff and living with domestic violence as a child, and the impact of it. And then I also had an abusive boyfriend myself through school, which again wasn't normal, because no one else around me was really going through it and no one's understanding me. I think they thought I was a bit of a liar or I exaggerated, because he was a spoiled rich brat and he was from a very different world to I was, because we grew up with no money and stuff. So I think all of that, I thought, no, I've got to do good from all this bad. So I think that's what really pushed me. And then I thought, I need to get my education and stuff, because I didn't want to go to uni. I was trying to avoid that, but I had no choice. So I was like, damn, I'm gonna have to actually go.
Like, you briefly touched on like your own experience of having an abusive relationship, and you know, people not necessarily saying that people saying that they didn't take it as serious as they should. Why do you think that we don't take abusive relationships in amongst teenagers as seriously as we should?
I think because if you see a young person, then you might put it down to their age, that they're naive or they're not really, you know, he's just silly or he's just young. I think it can depend as well. And like I said, the dynamics of me and him, I'm from like a poor background, he's from a very well-off background. And he would, because I was infatuated with him, I'll say that, and he would twist it like, oh, she's obsessed with me, or she's a stalker and this, that and the other, which I wasn't. He was obviously playing mind games. I remember, say, once I was going to go out and had this cute little dress, and he came to my house and he took it from my house and I didn't know. And I can't remember, for the life of me, I can't remember who I told. It was an adult. And I was like, he took my dress so I couldn't wear it. And they kind of laughed it off. And actually, as an adult, I'd like to think more so. You'd think, why has he done that? So I think it's not seen as much because, it's just like, oh, silly childhood.
Boys being boys,
yeah,
type.
Yeah. When actually he did a lot of messed up stuff to me. And I think is it like 2013 or something? It's only just changed where they brought in 16 and 17 year olds classed under the domestic violence law. So I think it's just lack of awareness, and other things might overshadow it, such as like grooming or criminal exploitation and them sort of things. But yeah, it was difficult, because like even his friends and that would be like, oh no, I can't see him doing that. And
with young people, do you think that shows that dramatize abusive relationships probably contribute to people not taking it seriously amongst young people?
Yeah, because I think as well, like, it could be seen as, oh, he's just protective, oh, he really likes you, he does that because he cares. There's a lot of excuses made up for that behavior, when actually no, just because say he's 16, he still can be manipulative, coercive, like emotionally and physically abusive. Because like the turning point for me was, because I did go back, obviously that's the cycle of abuse, and because I was dealing with all them things that I spoke about with my mom, at times of his house, it was like a respite for me. So going there, I loved it. Like I loved his mom. I just loved being there, and it was a break from my own crap. And he abused that also. So I think sometimes the background also can fuel that more.
breaking the cycles of abuse, especially when you're young, because nobody talks to you about it and talks to you about coercive control, and there's a lack of education in that area. How do you know, like, to break that cycle? Like, how did you know?
So I was like on and off with him. He was like my only boyfriend from like year seven all the way till I was 18. That's how long I was in love with him or whatever. And it was one day where I'd gone to see him. I thought we was getting back together. He'd made out we was getting back together. Shouldn't have anyway, because like I said, he was absolutely vile to me. And we were driving in the car. He was taking me back home. And he basically said we wasn't. And he'd used me that weekend. And I burst out crying. I was just like, what? You used me? This, that, and the other. And he went across the car. I was in the car and he just went bam like that in my face. And my nose doesn't really bleed, and it just went poof. And I was just like, wow, this is not okay. So then was near mine and he's parked up, and I was really upset, and I was thinking, I can't go into my house like this. Like, my face, I'm crying, and when I cry, I can't stop. Blood everywhere. And I thought, I can't go into my mum like this. And I was like, panicking about the situation I'm in. And I was in the car and I was like, right, I need a moment. I need to sort myself out. And then he bit me, that was weird. Yeah. Like, he bit me and he dragged me out of the car. And I just ran. I ran from the house. And And then, yeah, I've not told this story in so long. So then I ran to my house and I was crying, but luckily I'd had like a dark blue dress on, so you couldn't see the blood. So I was grateful for that outfit that day. And then I just told my mom, like, oh, we've split up. I didn't tell her the ins and outs, but that was the turning point. And I thought, that is not okay. Like, that's really messed up. And I thought, no chance. This is not happening to me ever again. It was, obviously I've made that choice, but that's also shown me actually how it is hard to break that cycle. I understand from other people's point of view, you know, people are so quick to be like, oh, why are you back with him? Like, my friends at school at that time, they'd be like, well, you keep going back to him. Why are you back with him? And they didn't understand. And then interestingly enough, and obviously I'd never wish this on anybody, as they were older, experienced it. Whereas I experienced it younger, because it is so much more common than people like realize. And it doesn't have to be to that level of abuse. It can be emotionally or just the coercive or the manipulation and the control. But that was it for me. I thought, no, I'm not letting him do that to me again. And that really pushed me then to think, I want to help people in all aspects, because you know, my mental health had been impacted. I'm living with my mum that's dealing with X, Y, and Z from the impact of what she's dealt with. And, you know, how that's impacted her, because that's obviously led to other issues and how she tried to deal with it. And, yeah, it's just a massive ripple effect. And I just thought,
I think the thing is with cycles of abuse, people don't realise is that because your self-esteem has been lowered so much when you go through something like that, is that you crave something familiar, or you want someone to make you feel good, yeah. And you'll believe that they will change, or that, you know, things are really good for a little bit, and then you get back in and then it starts all over again.
Yeah.
And I think it's really hard, unless you've lived through it yourself, to try and explain it to other people. But you've been in it and watched it happen.
Yeah, I've had the best of both worlds, so to speak.
But it's, do you think that maybe that was one of the reasons that you wanted to stay so long, because it was a sense of familiarity?
Yeah, I think definitely. At that age, I loved him. Like, I was infatuated with him. I loved him, and like, it's one of them, isn't it? When it's good, it's really good.
Yeah.
And like I said to you, because I was dealing with my own stuff, his mom sounds ridiculous, but I also had that really close relationship with his mom, and it was also losing that connection and that respite and getting away. And it was like I'd lose a massive part because then if I'd lost all that good on that side of things, then I'm left with all this shit that I'm dealing with, that I'm living through. So that's probably why I clung on to it longer than I should have, when really he did not deserve me. And I think it's funny because his mum knew, because she used to always tell me I deserved better. She used to always make comments and stuff. So I think she knew what her son was actually really like.
It's really upsetting when someone's mum says that to you, because they feel like they can't do anything.
Yeah.
They know that it's happening.
Yeah. I think she caught once, he was like, he just kind of headbutted me, and I think she caught the end of it. But it was just blown over. And yeah. I remember his dad or something said, Shanita looks a bit miserable when she comes round. And I thought, yeah, because of your abusive son, mate. So, yeah, I think they know. But that's, you know what? I've sat here and cried, obviously, because I've not spoken about it in so long. But I'm not, obviously, I wish it never happened. But it's contributed to who I am today.
Yeah.
It's contributed to my amazing understanding of what abuse looks like. And it's really given me the skills to help other people. And I know that from like feedback I've had within my role of social work and speaking to others. So yeah, you've got to take the lessons and the good from a really horrible situation.
Yeah, because I know you spent a little bit of time when you were younger living in a refuge as well.
So we just experienced it for, I remember how long it was, but yeah, because obviously my mum went through what she was going through. And again, that was when I was a lot younger, and I'd come back on granddad's or somewhere. And again, no one in the family really knew what we were living with. I think that's always interesting as well, because, you know, your family is meant to be your family, but they don't always know the ins and outs of what's actually going on behind closed doors. And I suppose you don't really speak about it for various reasons. So yeah, we went and stayed in a refuge for some time, and it was in a horrible area. It was like just predominantly white. I remember some white wall area, which, you know, there's no issue with that, but I was just a bit like, oh. And we was like, yeah, spot the black person. me and my mum and my brother defo stood out. So that was, again, weird. You know, weird area. It wasn't weird, but you know what I mean. As a kid, you're thinking it's a weird area. Because we went to like this hotel first, and then they moved you to the refuge. Yeah, it's so funny because, again, I've blocked that out. I've blocked a lot out, I've realised. And yeah, that was just weird, just living in this place. And I missed school. And I think it was really hard because I wasn't there, again, funny enough, for what led to us living the refuge at that point. This is a lot earlier on. And I remember going to school, and a few people that lived on my street must have witnessed, because he basically like smashed the front door down and made a right scene and debacle. So I remember going to school, and like these girls like, oh yeah, so this happened, and I'm like, what? I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea what had happened. This like junior school, and these girls are coming and telling me, oh yeah, this, and we heard this, and I think it's because of this, and he did that, and you're like, oh okay. And that was, yeah, that was very weird. So absolute madness. And I use humor a lot. Like a lot of people, like, so for instance, when I did maths, you do your psychology stuff,
yeah,
and you have to say what you've been through. And I sat and I told the, because I am very open about what I've been through. I'm not ashamed of it, because one, I didn't fucking ask for it. Two, it's made me who I am, and I embrace it now. Like, maybe when I was younger, I'd be really embarrassed and I'd feel really crap about it, and like say, self-esteem and that. But now I'm like, you know what? That was my life. This is who I am. I can't change the past. All I can do is work with it. And I think with maths, the psychologist speaking to me, and she turned around to me at the end after I told her everything. And she was like, she went, I will say, she said, if I'd put you on mute throughout you speaking about that, she said, I think I would have thought you were speaking about something positive. And I think it was from that moment I realised actually my coping mechanisms and how I am. And maybe that's because I have come to terms now with what it is that I've gone through. Don't worry, I'm obviously still emotionally can eat me up. But that was a really interesting comment, I thought.
Yeah, obviously you use humour as your coping mechanism, but how has your childhood experiences really affected your mental health?
Oh, I've been in dark places, like really dark places. I think because I was, as a child, I was really positive, energetic. I probably would have got diagnosed with ADHD myself as a kid. And I went into like more miserable as that then things happened. I went more miserable. I'd more pessimistic, and I was a real believer in if something good had happened to me, something really bad's going to happen because I can't have anything good happen because life doesn't work like that. Only bad things happened. So I hated myself at one point in my teenage years. Absolutely hated myself. Hated my life, hated just everything. And then as I got older, obviously that abusive relationship, I met my ex, who I was with for 10 years. And he came at a time where I needed someone to come. And he was like, you're moving in with me. Because them things not only did I live with, they affected my relationship with my mom. My relationship with my mom was horrendous. It was really, really bad. Because at the times I'm thinking, you know, I probably blamed her a lot because I didn't understand, obviously, abuse and stuff. So I was in a dark place. He's come along. And then my attachment, everything like that, my relationship, it was affected with him. But, I mean, 10 years strong, like, we didn't split up, so I was doing something right. And then after that relationship ended, COVID had just hit. I'd finished my relationship where I've been codependent on this person ridiculously so, to the point we didn't go anywhere without each other. Did everything to get, brushed our teeth to get, like, everything. COVID had hit. I was living alone. There was lockdown. I'd had a horrendous dental surgery thing go wrong, and it was hitting me, and I was so, so low. And I remember thinking, I wasn't, when I was a kid, there was times I was suicidal, but I remember thinking, I understand why people get to the point they do. I genuinely did get counselling, which I'm a big advocate for counselling. Like, I recommend it to anybody. But at that time, I thought, right, something's got to change. So then I worked a lot on myself in terms of like what's called like shadow work, where you look at the darker side of yourself, things that trigger you. I got counselling. I had to be signed off work from social work because that's hard as well. You're doing a job where you're helping so many other people and so many people are dependent on you, but then you're also dealing with your own stuff. It just grinds you down and you're just trapped and you're suffocated. So that's kind of what I did. And I just tried to do more positive things, meditation. And I just changed my outlook and changed how I think about things. So now if something bad happens, I'm like, well, that's just making way for something good. And that's kind of how I went with changing. Because I get it online all the time, like, oh, you're so positive. And I am genuinely like a positive person. I'm smiley, I'm chatty. That is me. But I also present on social media when I'm not so chatty or I'm feeling down, because I think it's so important to show the reality of every day is not sunshine and rainbows. Sometimes you're going to feel absolutely crap, and that's okay. And if you need a duvet day and to just chill and unwind, do that. So it's just about loving myself. That's been a big thing. Accepting the past and self-care, definitely self-care. And just not being so hard on myself. I've always been really, really hard on myself, and I'm my own worst critic. So I've tried to shift that also. Don't get me wrong, it's still like a work in progress. Like maths, I'll be honest, I felt maths undid so much of the work I did on myself. And the way Jordan treated me, like just mentally understanding what I'd been through on the show. And it's a big thing, isn't it? Going on TV and then all of a sudden people know who you are. And
yeah, because I think my next question to you is about to be like, you know, participating in a reality show where you're filmed all of the time. So it's not like, you know, when you see things like TOWIE and stuff like that, where it's like breaks in between, like your entire life is on camera for however long. And it is mentally taxing because it's not just like from the moment you wake up, you're on camera. And to the moment you go to sleep and potentially even when you are asleep. So I was going to ask you, like, how did you cope? Like, how did you carry on that self-care stuff throughout that kind of filming?
I think, I remember when I went into the apartment, I was devastated I didn't have a bath. Because baths were so important to me. And I walked in, I was like, there's no bath. Like, and then I had a breakdown over that. But I think that's because I was at my, like, the stress level, because that's when I was just starting to really understand, like, the film. And like you said, there's so much to it. And I think I did go in a little bit naive because I was more looking at the social experiment side and the relationship rather than the TV side.
Yeah.
And if you haven't done TV before, you don't know, do you? You really don't. So that, I think my self-care did go out the window. I'm stuck in an apartment with someone I don't know, really and truly. I can't go to a bar. I can't go to the cinema. I can't do them things because we're living like COVID times.
Yeah.
At the beginning as well, the other people in the experiment, don't know, I start to trust them. Then it's like they're doing things, bitching and not being actually authentic. So then I can't trust the people I'm with. And I felt really, really lonely at the beginning, really lonely. And then you've got no routine schedule that you'd normally have. Your eating's all weird and you're eating stuff that you wouldn't necessarily. So I think it all took more of a toll than I realised. But then saying that, I did have friendships there. So they would pick me up and there was welfare. So I'd speak to them. I remember I had a tiff with Jordan. He decided he was going to just leave me in the apartment. And that did me really bad. Right. And because I always felt as well, I was always putting his needs first. So I just felt alone. And I felt like, actually, is anyone really, really there for me?
Yeah.
I'm trying to be there for you, but you're not, you know, giving it back. So there was times where I felt low, but then on the flip side, I did make really good memories also. There was a lot of good times. So it kind of balanced it. And because me and Jordan had a really good run of it going well, I think that helped. But it's just, I just was trying to appreciate the experience and actually, wow. And obviously at that time I thought, was going to run off into the sunset. So that kind of kept me going. And I was naughty and I put my friends' numbers in my little burner phone. So I made sure and text them.
Wait, you have a burner phone?
Yeah, so all our phones get taken, but then we get these like little, I say burner, that's so like street, isn't it? Sorry. I don't even know, what are they called? Little phone, that's like £10.
Oh, were they? You didn't have the big fancy, I still call it a burner phone.
Yeah, it's a burner phone. No, yeah, so we had like drug dealer phones, you know, the little £10 ones that can't be traced. It was them. And I didn't even have Snake on it. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's how bad
they
it was.
They were really pushing your buttons.
Yeah. So we got given them.
Yeah.
And that was more so like welfare could message us and we could message the cast members, whatever. And I got my phone, which, because they'd give us our normal phones now and again so we could pay our bills and do all of that. So I was like, right, got my phone, wrote my number down. I was like, guys, this is my burner phone. Like, because I thought, I can't do this fully without speaking to somebody. Because actually, no one here actually knows me for who I am.
Yeah.
And I can't fully trust certain people. So that was a little, that's what I did.
I always thought maths was more relaxed than Love Island. Like, you had a little bit more freedom and you could speak to people outside the experiment and stuff.
Not really, no. I mean, we got in trouble one day because after that commitment ceremony where literally everybody was just, depressed. There's no one better word to say it. We was like, right, tomorrow we just need to let our hair down. And we all planned to go to the Alchemist and we staggered it. So it was like, right, you leave and we'll meet at that Tesco down the road. So everyone had like a 5-minute appointment to leave. Duca messed it up because it's just Duca, his big mouth, and told welfare. anyway, so we'd, before this, we'd had a head start from Duca messing it up. We all went to the Alchemist. We was getting, we bought drinks and the food. It was like a feast. And then, so we got a call from welfare, like, where are you? And so he was like, I can't lie. I just can't lie. So then the welfare came.
They like, came to the bar.
Oh, yeah, because we had to be, sometimes we had to be, what's the word when you like looked after and followed about? I can't think of the word.
Oh, I don't know what the word is, like, but I know what you mean.
Chaperoned.
Oh, yeah.
We had to be chaperoned, right? So he come and he was so angry. He was like someone's disappointed dad.
I would have hated to be that person because I would have like loved you guys doing that, but then I would hated to be the person to take it back.
Well, it's because we'd all gone, so I think he's peed off about that. And then his face, oh, bless him. And we loved Lewis, bless him, and he come. And then was like, do you want some food?
Trying to soften the blow.
Yeah, and he was like, eating it. So we couldn't do anything. It was quite strict. Even like with homestays and stuff, it's not what it looks like. It's very, you go in home, you're coming back. It's really restricted. And because they were scared, obviously, COVID. Sorry. It was a lot. You're in a bubble, basically. That's the best way. You're in a bubble and you can't, it's weird, you're out of like reality. When I come back to my life, I was just a bit like, whoa, I haven't got someone knocking on my door at 8, like we're going to film, I haven't got cars taking me here, there and everywhere, or someone bringing me lunch. So coming back into reality, it was strange.
Are you planning on ever returning back to social work after maths?
I've not like ruled it out, no, but I have taken a break because I can't recognise so much and I don't want maths to overshadow actually my job that I do, and someone being like, oh well, you did this. I'm like, no, I'm here to do this job. So I've kind of let it so it dies down a bit.
Yeah.
But I went on maths to get a husband. I didn't get a husband. I got a platform, which has blown my mind and has been because very like kind of I was new to social media in that respect. So I kind of want to bring the two worlds together as best I can. I've got this platform now, so I'm thinking, what can I do with that platform? How can I help others? I want to do something good with it. So now I'm just like in the process of looking at working with different charities and organizations where I can utilize my platform, working with them and speaking about my experiences to then help other people that have been in the same situations. So that's kind of where my headspace is at now.
Yeah. What do you think you'd say to younger self?
It's going to be all right. You've got this. Like, yeah, it's going to be horrible at times. It's going to be really bad. But you're going to come out the other end. And actually, you're going to surprise yourself. You get your degree. Everything that you've ever wanted to achieve, you achieved it. And just keep trying, even when it's bad times. Okay. And I think the best thing that I read once is sometimes when you feel that you're being buried, actually, you're just being planted for better things to bloom. So that is what I kind of keep in my head.
Yeah, no, that's really nice. I think as well, what would you say to somebody that was listening that was probably like, is going through what you've been through in the past?
I'd probably say it might be hard now, but it will get better. There's people out there that you can speak to. There's charities, organisations that can help. Do not feel alone. And even if you are in the most darkest of places, you've got this, you've got the strength to carry on and see the light at the end of the tunnel. There is a light, even if you can't see it. So that's what I'd say. And just love yourself and remember like how amazing you actually are. Just because someone else is saying X, Y, and Z, it's about how you feel. And just remember you're amazing.
The last question I want to ask you is, what would you say to people that doubted your ability to be successful based on your childhood experiences?
How you like me now? No.
I love that every person has exactly the same response. Doesn't matter which way I flip the question, they have the same response.
No, I was going to say, look at me now, bitches, but I'm refraining.
She said it anyway, so...
because it's funny, you know, at school I was seen as the distraction, and I was chatty, and that's probably because I was going through everything, and I remember this one teacher, I can't stand him. He was an idiot. It's not just me saying that. And he turned around to me once and he was like, "You don't do well with authority." And he was just really horrible to me. And then I remember laughing once, like, "Oh, now I'm in an authoritative job." So I didn't like authority. I became authority.
You should look him up on LinkedIn. I'm sure he'd like to know.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, he was. Yeah. So that's what I look back at. I think a lot of people doubted me, especially as well because I've been told so many times, given what I've gone through and my upbringing and stuff, I probably should have been on a complete different path. So I take a lot from that. And I think, again, anyone else who's dealing with that, you can break a cycle. Believe me, you can break a cycle. You can change your path. If you don't want to deal with something or you're thinking, no, this isn't for me, go do you, because, yeah, you've got this. So that's probably what I'd say.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for, like, honestly, the stuff you talked about. First of all, I'm sorry that you cried.
I'm an emotional person.
I have a habit of making people cry and I don't actually mean to do it. So I'm sorry for that. But I'm really grateful that you came on and shared your experiences and were really open.
Thank you for having me.
I can't wait to see what you do with it because, you know, there's a lot of people out there that look at contributors of reality TV and just assume you are going to be one type of person or you're just going to do the same thing. So, you know, I'm really excited to look and can't wait to see what you get up to.
Thank you. Sorry, my mind's gone blank. It's funny, sorry. It's funny when you think I've not spoke about this in so long. So then now I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, oh crap, yeah. And then you just get all the thoughts and the memories back in your head and you think that was really.